Turn to the book of John, chapter 21. Book of John, chapter 21. We preached from these verses back in November. How to have a spiritually bountiful day. We'd like to read these verses again. We'll look at it from a little different angle this time. We'll read the first 22 verses. After these things, Jesus showed or revealed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. On this wise, or in this manner, showed he himself. There were together Simon Peter, Thomas, called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, which would be James and John, and two other of his disciples, unnamed. Simon Peter saith unto them, I go a-fishing. They say unto him, We also go with thee. They went forth and entered into a ship. Immediately, and that night they caught nothing. But when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore. But the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. Then Jesus said unto them, Children, have ye any meat? They answered him, No. He said unto them, Cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. They cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. Therefore that disciple whom Jesus loved, that would be John, saith unto Peter, It is the Lord. Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girded his fisher's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. And the other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from land, but as they were about 200 cubits, or about 100 yards, dragging the net with fishes. As soon as they were come to land, they saw a fire of coals there, and fish laid thereon, and bread. Jesus said unto them, Bring of the fish which ye have now caught. Simon Peter went up and drew the net to the land full of great fishes, 153. And for all there were so many, yet was not the net broken. Jesus said unto them, Come and dine. And none of the disciples durst ask him, Who art thou? Knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus then cometh and taketh bread and giveth them, and fish likewise. This is now the third time that Jesus showed himself to his disciples, after that he was risen from the dead. So when they had dined, Jesus saith to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these? He said unto him, Yea, Lord, Thou knowest that I love thee. He saith unto him, Feed my lambs. He saith to him again the second time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? He said unto him, Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He said unto him, Feed my sheep. He said unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? Peter was grieved, because he said unto him the third time, Lovest thou me? And he said unto him, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest that I love thee. Jesus said unto him, Feed my sheep. Verily, verily, I say unto thee, when thou wast young, thou girdest thyself and walkest whither thou would. When thou shalt be old, thou shalt stretch forth thy hands, and another shall gird thee and carry thee whither thou wouldst not. This spake he, signifying by what death he should glorify God. When he had spoken this, he saith unto him, Follow me. Then Peter, turning about, seeth the disciple whom Jesus loved, again John, following, which also leaned on his breast at supper, and said, Lord, which is it? Which is he that betrayeth thee? Peter, seeing him, saith to Jesus, Lord, and what shall this man do? Jesus said unto him, If I will that he tarry or do nothing till I come, what is that to thee? Follow thou me. We see here in verse 14, that this is the third post-resurrection appearance of Christ to the disciples or to the apostles. We see that we see two others there in John chapter 20 on the night of the resurrection. And the first one was on the night of the resurrection, and then the other one a week later. Now this third revelation of Christ or appearance of Christ we see took place at the Sea of Tiberias there in verse 1. We read in John 6 and verse 1 that this is, would be the same as the Sea of Galilee. We see here from verse 2 that there were seven apostles present at this particular appearance. And all seven, no doubt, benefited from the appearance of Christ. But I believe that Peter was more benefited than all the rest. And though there were seven present, and no doubt all seven received benefit, again, I believe that this particular appearance of Christ and what transpired during this appearance was specifically for Peter. The Lord came there specifically for Peter with the purpose of restoring him to the service of the Lord. God's restoration of His people is a marvelous thing. It's a great wonder. It proceeds, of course, from His love, His grace, His mercy, His long-suffering. That God is willing to take the initiative to restore His people after they have failed, once again, is just a wonderful, wonderful thing to think about. And the subject tonight is the wonder of spiritual restoration. In order to understand John chapter 21, in order to glean from the blessings contained in this chapter, we have to consider the action of Peter prior to this passage. So we want to look briefly at the sin and fall of Peter, and then we want to look and see how the Lord restored Peter to a life of service. But concerning the sin of Peter, you would go back to that night in the upper room, and there is Christ with the 12, with His church. It's not our point in this message to look at what took place that night in the upper room. But on that night, Jesus told His church that He was going away. That was very troubling to them. He was going somewhere that they could not come. He also told them that they would be offended because of Him on that very night. And as a result, they would all be scattered in fear. Jesus, after He told them that, gave them the promise that even though that was true, He would continue to shepherd them. He said in Matthew 26 and verse 32, "But after I am risen, I will go before you into Galilee. Though you have forsaken me, though you will forsake me, after I'm risen, I will meet you in Galilee." Peter became fixated upon Christ's words that they would all be offended because of Him. That they would all be offended because of Him and be scattered. And he says to Christ in Matthew 26 and verse 33, "Though all men," and obviously referring to the ones that were there, which would be the apostles, "though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended." With those words, Peter openly displayed great self-confidence. He also displayed a feeling of superiority spiritually over the others. It is implied that he thought that he had greater love for Christ than the other apostles had. He was basically saying, "Lord, you can count on me. You may not be able to count on all these others, but you can count on me." Peter thought that though others might be capable of forsaking Him. I don't believe Peter necessarily had a problem with "Oh, you may be offended at me." He could believe that. Oh, yeah, I could see where these would take off in fear. But his problem was he thought he was beyond. He thought he was beyond the spiritual failure that the Lord had spoken of. So this is really an expression of his pride, is an expression of his self-righteousness, is an expression of his self-ignorance. We need to be aware of this entire thought process. We hear Christ's reply. Notice if we go over to Luke chapter 22, verses 31 and 32. And the Lord said, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for thee, that thy faith fail not, and when thou art converted..." So he was going to fall. The Lord's telling him, "Peter, you're going to fall. But I'm going to bring you back. You're going to be converted. And after that happens, I want you to strengthen thy brethren." So we see Christ's reply, and then we see the self-confident reply of Peter in verse 33. "And he said unto him, Lord, I am ready to go with thee, both into prison and into death." Christ proceeded to tell him in Mark's account, in Mark 14 and verse 30, "By the time the rooster crows twice, you will have denied me three times." Peter's response to that, Mark chapter 14, verse 31, "But he spake the more vehemently, If I should die with thee, I will not deny thee in any wise or in any way." And then it is added, "Likewise also said they all." Now it's important to realize that the root of Peter's denials are pride, self-sufficiency, and a feeling of superiority. That's the root of Peter's fall. Later that night, Christ, of course, was arrested. We read in Luke 22 and verse 54, they took Jesus, led him away, and brought him unto the high priest's house. And then it is stated, "And Peter followed afar off." Matthew records in Matthew 26 and verse 58, "But Peter followed him afar off unto the high priest's palace and went in and sat with the servants to see the end." In Luke chapter 22 and verse 55, we have the picture of Peter sitting down around the fire amongst those in the courthouse, in the courtyard of the high priest. And notice again there in Luke chapter 22, verse 56 and verse 57. "But a certain maid," verse 55, "they're all set down together. Peter sat among them. But a certain maid, a servant girl, beheld him as he sat by the fire, and earnestly looked upon him." She began to stare at him. He was familiar to her. "And said, This man was also with him. And he denied him, saying, Woman, I know him not." Following that denial, Mark tells us in his account, Mark 14, verse 68, "And he went out," that is, he left that fire, "and he went into the porch, and we're told the cock crew." The sound of that rooster should have caused Peter to be overcome at that very moment with conviction. But shortly after that, notice again back in Luke 22, verse 58, And after a little while, another saw him there on the porch and said, Thou art also of them. And Peter said, Man, I am not. And then about an hour later, notice verse 59 and 60, in about the space of 1 hour, after another confidently affirmed, saying, Of a truth, this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean. And Peter said, Man, I know not what thou sayest. And immediately, while he yet spake, the cock crew. Three distinct times, Peter denied the Lord Jesus Christ. As you read the accounts, you see that he did so with an oath. He says, I never knew him. I have nothing to do with him. He declares that, again, I never knew him. I don't know what you're talking about. Declares that he never knew the one who saved his soul. Peter had heard Jesus speak the most powerful words ever spoken. Peter had followed Christ. And now he declares that he knows him not. He not only declares that he knows him not, he declares this man who healed my mother-in-law, I don't know him. I don't know who he is. Peter had seen the Lord heal the blind. He had seen him heal the lame, the deaf, the demon-possessed. He had even seen him raise the dead. And yet he declares three times, I know him not. Peter had witnessed the Lord feeding the multitudes. He had witnessed the Lord calming a storm. He had experienced the Lord saving him from drowning in the Sea of Galilee. And now he declares, I know him not. Not only does he deny his master once, but three times. And he does so very vehemently. What we read here is not the sin of an unsaved individual. What we read here is the sin of a saved man. What we read here is the sin of an apostle of Jesus Christ, a gospel preacher, a man who truly loved the Lord, a true believer, a child of grace. He was one who had enjoyed special privileges from the Lord. And he had special mercies shown to him. And what we read here is the sin and failure and the fall of one who was in the inner circle, Peter, James, and John. Here is a man who was in the inner circle of Christ's friends. He had been very bold in professing Jesus Christ. He had been very bold in professing his faith and his love towards Christ. But now he's ashamed of Christ. And he's afraid to be seen and to be identified with him. He denies him not once, not twice, but three times. There's no hiding it. There's no denying it. Peter has sinned. Peter has fallen. He not only denied the Lord, but he denied the Lord cursing. Peter has fallen. Now we want to look at the restoration process. Peter has miserably sinned against the Lord. He has grievously failed Christ. He has acted in a very shameful way. He has acted in a very cruel way. And we read in verse 61 of Luke chapter 22, after he had denied Christ for the third time, and the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. This begins the restoration process. Not a word was spoken, but it would require many, many, many words to express what that look said. The Lord looked upon Peter. And it was a sermon, though there wasn't a word spoken. It was a sermon that Peter could not get away from. For the next 3 days, that look is embedded in Peter's mind. It was a very grieved look. It was an offended look. It was a look of rebuke. I believe also that it was a look of love. It was a look that reflected the tenderness and the compassion and the faithfulness of Christ. I believe in that look were the words, they weren't spoken, but that look said, I love you, Peter. I love you still. And I haven't denied thee. And I have not turned my back upon you. This look was between Peter and Christ. Nobody else knew that the Lord looked upon Peter except Peter and Christ. The consequences of that look, verse 61 of Luke 22, and Peter remembered the word of the Lord back in that upper room. Peter remembered the word of the Lord. Up to this point, his mind had been asleep, but not now. His mind is awakened. Peter remembered the word of the Lord. Peter remembered what God told him. Notice verse 62. Of Luke 22. And Peter went out. The Lord looked upon Peter, and Peter went out. Who was he with? He was with the enemies of Christ. And that look severed Peter from that crowd. Peter went out. And what did he do? And wept bitterly. And wept bitterly. I believe Peter is all by himself. This is convulsive weeping. Convulsive weeping now comes upon Peter. Because now Peter has realized what he has done. You will not be restored until you come to this painful realization of what has been done. A lot of people want to be restored, but they want to skip this step. This is the first step. It's the very first step. Peter, or Christ, looked upon Peter. And Peter has realized what he has done. But the story does not end there. The story does not end with Peter weeping bitterly. Christ had a very special interest in Peter. And that's amazing. That the Lord would have a special interest in any of us is an amazing thing. Following Christ's resurrection, so now we advance 3 days. Following Christ's resurrection, the message of the angel from Christ to the women, and we've preached on this before also, Mark 16, verse 7. go your way, tell his disciples. And then there's two amazing words. And Peter. Go tell the apostles and Peter. It's as if that angel said, go tell his disciples that I am risen. And by the way, make sure you tell Peter. Make sure that you tell Peter. Jesus with those words, or the angel with those words, was expressing the Lord's special concern and special interest in Peter. That's grace. That's mercy. That's love. The last time we saw Peter was Luke 22:61-62. And he's weeping bitterly. For 3 days, think upon Peter's state of mind. Peter was a miserable individual for the next 3 days. No doubt those were days of great sadness, days of misery, and despondency, and gloom and heartache. Again, people want to be restored, but they want to skip all that. Doesn't work that way. These were days of shame. Peter knew what he had done. These were days of disgrace. These were days of terrible, terrible guilt. Don't ever, if a child of God gets to this place, don't ever come to them and say, well, don't feel so bad. You're working against the Lord. And we see, again, the story doesn't end here. For 3 days, Peter is miserable because he realizes what he has done. He realizes that he has sinned against the Lord. Now, in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 5, Paul gives us a review of Christ's appearances. And he says there in verse 5 of chapter 15, and he was seen of Cephas. He was seen of Cephas. The first one who saw him, we saw her this morning, Mary Magdalene. The first apostle to see him was Peter. The only gospel record of that statement, he was seen of Cephas, is found in Luke chapter 24. Notice verse 34. In this, we see Jesus has appeared to the two disciples on the Emmaus Road. And in verse 34, these two disciples have arrived back where the apostles were in Jerusalem. Verse 34, saying, the Lord is risen indeed and hath appeared to Simon. That's the only record we have. We have Paul's statement, and he was seen of Cephas. And then the only record we have was, he hath appeared to Simon. Concerning that appearance, no details are given. But I believe that it was a very intimate occasion with many, many tears. And I believe that Peter was reconciled to Christ at that first appearance, personally. He was personally reconciled to Christ. Why don't we have any record of what transpired? Because the process of reconciliation begins as a very, very private, a one-on-one session with Jesus Christ. But oh, how wonderful when Jesus appears to bring personal restoration. So I believe that Peter was restored at that moment in the communion with Jesus Christ. Following this, there was the appearance of the two again on the Emmaus Road. Two appearances of to the apostles a week apart there in John chapter 20. The first appearance in John 20 verses 19 through 25, he dealt with them as a whole. And in the second one, though they were all there, he dealt with Thomas. But what is striking about those two appearances? Peter was always the spokesman for the apostles. He was always the first one to speak up. But you read about those two appearances there in John 20. And Peter's silent. That's very unlike Peter. Though he had been restored personally, things still aren't the same. Peter doesn't say anything. Very, very unusual. In our text, John chapter 21, I believe we have record of Peter being publicly restored as an apostle. Restored to a life of service. It is one thing to be restored as a personal disciple. It is another to be restored publicly as an apostle. To be restored to the service of God. But the order is specific. Before you can be restored to the service of God, you have to be restored personally. That's the order. So I believe what we have here in our text is Peter being restored to a life of service. Coming to our text in verse 3, Peter says, "I go a-fishing." I believe with those words, you can believe what you want, but I believe with those words, Peter felt that even though he was restored personally to the Lord, that he could never serve the Lord again. And I believe this is more than "I go a-fishing." I believe he's saying more there than "I'm just going to go fishing for a couple hours." I believe Peter was going back to his old boats and nets. And we read there that they fished through the night and they caught nothing. They caught nothing. That was part of the Lord also bringing Peter to this place of restoration. It's amazing how the Lord restores. It's amazing how the Lord works. He doesn't do it the same with everyone. I believe there's that personal one-on-one. But he has many means. They caught nothing. That's part of the process here. The morning comes in verse 4. And Jesus is standing on the shore. And I believe the main reason that Jesus is standing on the shore is to restore Peter to a life of service. And again, how wonderful it is when Jesus shows up to bring restoration. He's the only one who can. They had been fishing through the night, and he asked them from the shore, not for information's sake, "Have you caught anything?" I'm paraphrasing. They said nothing. "We haven't caught anything." He instructs them in verse 6 to cast the net on the right side of the ship. They did as he said, and they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. It was at that moment verse 7 that John realizes it's the Lord. That one on the shore about 100 yards away, that's Jesus. John recognizes him. And then we read that Peter cast himself into the sea. That is, he jumped out of the boat. He began to swim toward the shore. Peter and the others arriving in boats come to land. And in verse 9 it says, they saw fire of coals there. They all benefited from that fire of coals. But no one benefited like Peter did. And I believe that the Lord prepared that fire of coals just for Peter. The expression there, fire of coals, is used only one other time. Notice John chapter 18. John chapter 18. Verse 18. And the servants and officers stood there who had made a fire of coals. That's where Peter denied the Lord. For it was cold. And they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Peter, at that fire of coals, proceeded to deny the Lord. So, they come to the shore. They all see the fire of coals. And I suppose that different thoughts went through all of their minds, but what do you think Peter thought when he saw that fire of coals and there's Jesus? He not only saw the fire of coals, but he saw the fish and the bread. He saw that everything was ready. In verse 12, with the fire burning and the fish and bread prepared, Jesus said, come and dine. And they all sat there. They all had a silent breakfast with Jesus. No one said a word. And I believe that during that time, Peter probably looked at that fire of coals, ate of that fish, ate of that bread. That fire of coals brings back horrible memories. And he has to be thinking, what a miracle of mercy that I'm alive. What a miracle of mercy that he has made this preparation of fish and bread. And I am allowed to eat. And I am allowed to be here with my brethren. The message of Christ in all of this was, again, Peter went fishing, and basically what he's telling Peter is, Peter, you go ahead and go, but remember, you didn't catch anything till I came on the scene. He's about to restore him to service. Again, I believe they were all deeply impressed and all deeply impacted by that fire of coals and the fish and the bread. But none like Peter. The Lord had prepared this especially for Peter. In verse 15, we read, so when they had dined, and then Jesus breaks the silence. And when he did, who did he speak to? Peter. Because that's why he's there. Jesus saith to Simon Peter. Notice how he addresses him. Simon, son of Jonas. Simon, the son of man. Simon, son of a father. He addresses this one who had said, yet I will never be offended. He addresses him by his old name, Simon, son of Jonas. Why didn't he just say Simon? Why did he add Simon, son of Jonas? Because he's telling Peter, Peter, you're no different than the rest of these. Just like they're the son of a father, I remind you, so are you. He's telling Peter that except by my grace, again, you go back to that upper room, there was a feeling of superiority. And the Lord is telling Peter, except by my grace, you're no better than anyone. You're just the son of Jonas. This was all necessary in order for Peter to be restored to service. He had to be brought back to his origin. He had to see from where he came. And anything of value in him was all of grace. He had to know this if he's ever going to serve the Lord again. He had to be reminded of who he was. And then the Lord begins to question him. He says, lovest thou me more than these? Many believe that Jesus is speaking, Simon, do you, almost all believe, do you love me more than these boats and these nets and these fishes? Simon, are you going to go back to your old ways? And I suppose that is a possible interpretation. But I believe the more probable interpretation goes back to Peter's statement. Though all men should be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. In that statement he is saying, Lord, I love you more than all the rest of the apostles. And now he is addressed publicly with these disciples around him. Simon, do you really love me more than these? Love me. Christ is probing into Peter's feeling of superiority in his love. He's brought face to face with the fact that by his actions, they said that he didn't love him at all. What can Peter say? Lovest thou me more than these? What can he say in light of what he has done? It seems like the facts say, I don't love thee at all. I denied thee with cursings and swearings. That's what the facts seem to say. Peter commits himself to Christ and says, yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. Notice that Peter does not say. He didn't really answer the whole question. The question was, lovest thou me more than these? Peter didn't say, Lord, I love you more than these. That's not how he answered. Because Peter knew better. Now. Next, Jesus probes into the depth of Peter's love. He asks him a second time, verse 16. Lovest thou me. Notice he drops the words more than these. He's asking a different question. The first question was, lovest thou me more than these? The second question is, lovest thou me? In those first two questions, Jesus uses the form, the word agape. It's the form of love that he's talking about. It is love in its highest form. It's really the love of God. It's an unconditional, unchangeable love. And Peter, each time, responds with, I phileo thee, which is a love of between friends, a warm affection, an attachment, more emotional than devotional. So the Lord in those first two questions says, do you agape me? And Peter both times uses a different word and says, I phileo thee. That is, I love you as a friend. This is quite a change in Peter. Peter is brought to the point where he does not dare claim agape love. Yet, he does not deny. He knows in his heart, I love you. And he doesn't deny that. And he says, basically, Lord, despite my failing, despite my denials of you, I do have this love of friendship towards you. Then comes the third question, verse 17. And this question challenges the existence of his love. Simon, son of Jonas. Still all three times addresses him as Simon, son of Jonas. Simon, son of Jonas. Simon, son of Jonas. Lovest thou me? And this time, the Lord uses the word phileo. Phileo thou me? Do you have? Do you even love me with a love of friendship? Do you even love me with a mere human love? And it says that Peter was grieved. And most think that he was grieved because Jesus asked him three times, corresponding to his three denials. And the Lord did ask him three times, it's stated there. But I believe it's much more than that. Peter was grieved because Christ asked him this third time, not do you agape me? But do you even have the love of friendship toward me? And that grieved Peter. He had denied the Lord, acted as the part of an enemy and not a friend. What could he say? To the first two questions, notice Peter's answer was, Yea, Lord. Yea, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. But read the third response of Peter. There is no yea. That yea is a word of strong confidence. But that's not there in the third response. It is just simply, Lord, thou knowest that I love thee. He basically, again, the yea is gone. And he's saying basically, Lord, I know that my actions did not show it. But Lord, I do love you. I do, and he sticks with that same word, phileo. I do love you as a friend. What was Jesus doing here? He was stripping Peter of all self-righteousness. Peter had to become nothing. If he was going to serve the Lord again, he had to become nothing. It's true of all of us. If we're going to serve God, we have to become nothing. To be used of God, he had to be humbled to the depths. That's why three times, Simon, son of Jonas. He's humbling. Peter. He would have to lose all self-righteousness if he's going to truly serve the Lord. And again, he does not come back in this third answer with yea, but he simply appeals to the Lord's omniscience. Lord, thou knowest that I love you. That is restoration. That is part of the restoration to a life of service. We are most useful when we are most humbled by the Lord. With each question, the Lord followed with a duty. He said, feed my lambs. What's he talking about? He's talking about service. Feed my lambs. And then twice he says, feed my sheep, which may I say is more difficult than feed my lambs. That's a different message. But in those three statements, feed my lambs, feed my sheep, feed my sheep. What's he doing? He's calling him to service. He's restoring him to service. He then followed with a twofold call. Verse 19 and verse 22. Follow me. Again, what's he doing? He's calling him to service. Peter is being restored to a life of service. And then you come to the day of Pentecost, and there he is, serving the Lord. Amen. What a wonder that God is interested in restoring his people. What grace! Peter denied the Lord with cursings, acted like an unsaved man. I mean, if you were to look at Peter at that moment, you would say, certainly he's not saved. Certainly he isn't saved. There's one thing you need to recognize about Peter. We all act at times like we're not saved. But there's something you need to realize with Peter. He didn't keep on doing that. It didn't last long. It didn't last long. The Lord looked at him, and that's all it took. And Peter was melted. That is a child of God. Yes, we will fail. Yes, we will sin. Yes, we will do things. And people may say, well, how can they even be saved? Or we may even ask ourselves. But you won't stay in that condition long. Not a child of God. Oh, what a wonder. After Peter denied the Lord Christ, when he arose, the angels gave that message, go tell my disciples and Peter. Make sure you tell Peter. I'm interested in Peter. I have a concern for him. And he restored Peter personally. But Peter was to serve the Lord. He had to be restored to that also. So the order is he restores the individual to himself, and then he restores the individual to a life of service. Not at the same time, necessarily. Sometimes, perhaps. But there is a specific order. But what we ought to be so thankful for is that God is in the restoring business. Though we fail Him over and over and over and over and over again, He maintains His interest in us. And He comes and He restores. If that were not so, none of us would be here tonight. None of us. We're all testimony. Not only that the Lord saves, but the Lord restores sinning and falling saints. He restores. And oh, how glad we ought to be, how we ought to rejoice that He does so. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse 7.